Well, good afternoon, Shabbat Shalom. That opening prayer came from Psalm 19. That was by request. I was asked to use Psalm 119. Maybe they wanted me to do the entire psalm. If you'd like to, though, sometime this Sabbath or whenever, go ahead and go over that psalm. It's a beautiful psalm. It talks about the God of nature and then the God who gave us his law. So you see the impersonal force that gave us gravity and all the laws of nature, and he also gave us moral instruction. He took the trouble and time to tell us how to live. He gave us the instruction book. You know, when you get a machine, you get an instruction book with it. If you don't follow it, you have trouble. You know what they say: when all else fails, read the instructions. It's the same with your life. We got this instruction book here, and all else will fail, human beings, and then finally they will indeed read the instructions. But fortunately, we've learned ahead of most to pay attention to the instructions. Well, I hope that you've had a very wonderful week. Those of you in Southern California are aware of the Los Angeles Dodgers, and it's interesting, Vin Scully is going to come back for his 67th season next season. I think he's 87 years old, still announcing. So he's supposed to come back for his 67th season. And the Dodgers are about the most expensive team in baseball, along with the Yankees. And it's incredible what they pay baseball players these days. When I was a child, we were impressed then by what the major stars got. But that's, you know, a pittance, I guess, compared to what people are getting now who play baseball. But salaries have always been an issue in baseball, particularly for the very talented. Now, way back in the late 1920s, Babe Ruth was such a great athlete that his salary was quite high for the time period. Back in the late 1920s, supposedly the owner said to the Babe, you know, what are you complaining about? You're making more than President Hoover. And so the Babe said, yeah, but I had a much better season than he had. Mm-hmm. Along those lines. This is also, besides being baseball season in America, it's a political season, not only here, but I think up in Canada also. Today I want to go into a rather heavy subject, a rather deep subject, which I can't fully cover today, of course. I'll touch on it again on the Day of Atonement in a different way, perhaps, and with certain other different verses covered. I want to have a Bible study on the Day of Atonement where I can get into some of these issues from another perspective. But today, I want to talk about the subject of behind the scenes of world events. Behind the scenes, this is what I call it, behind the scenes of world events. People read newspapers, magazines, books. They want to try to analyze what's going on. This was a passion of mine all through my years, to try to understand why things happen the way they do. Why does history work out the way it does? And I flirted with, you know, Marxist ideology and various conspiracy theories. And there are people who have conspiracy theories, and we usually categorize it under the subject category of the black helicopters. I guess there are some people who think that some, you know, there are these black helicopters waiting to land, and perhaps out of them will come, you know, some kind of international force or maybe some kind of alien force. You know, some people talk about Roswell, New Mexico and Area 51, and, you know, these kinds of things. And one reason why people come up with that is because, you know, when they look at world events, it seems like things don't ever seem to work out the way they should. And it's almost like there's something going on to try to undermine what people would really want to have. Well, yes, it's true. It's because we live in a sinful world. And because of the sinful environment, things aren't going to be working out the way they should until, you know, there's a radical revolutionary change, which will be brought about, you know, by divine intervention. You know, I wasn't going to talk about this at all, but when I was in high school, I read a book called Apes and Essence. And it was by, I think, a famous British author. I think his name was Huxley. And the idea there was people had come to the point where they were, you know, there'd been a nuclear war and everything had gone wrong. And so they'd be actually be, you know, decided, well, maybe we should start worshiping Satan. They called him Belial in the book. They were worshiping Belial, maybe because he was basic, you know, like Baal. They had decided things had gone so bad, so they did. Maybe they should, you know, worship the dark side, as it were. Well, fortunately, that's not the way history is going to wind up. You know, we worship God, and God is the winner. God is the winner, and human beings ultimately will be the winners. But we do have to acknowledge, and that author was probably not a believer. He might have been an atheist. He was writing a novel to make a point. But we do have to understand that there is, in fact, a spirit reality. There is a God, and there are angels who serve God. But we also have to understand there is an evil force in the world that God has allowed for a period of time for his reasons. And there is an evil force in the world, and we need to recognize it. We need to acknowledge it. We need to know that it is reality, and we need to resist it. But we have to have that sense that it's real. A lot of people poo-poo it. They make jokes about it, and they want to discount it. Some people don't want to believe it. Others, you know, just feel, well, if whatever I can't taste, touch, and see, and smell, and hear, you know, or reason about, you know, if I can't exercise my human reason and use science, then I'm going to discount anything else. There is a spirit world beyond the physical, beyond what science can discover. And that spiritual world has a lot to do with what goes on behind the scenes in current in world affairs. We need to be aware of that, because it will help us to understand what's happening now, what has happened, and what will happen. And will help us to see why physical experts, the greatest of them, are not going to know the future. They're not going to really be able to understand fully what has happened, what is happening, and what will happen if they don't take the spiritual side into account. You know, periods of history have their spirit of the times, what we call the zeitgeist. And you can sense a trend, and sometimes you can see a trend and you can wonder, how is it happening? How are all these people caught up in this or that movement? And yes, there are physical factors that can be analyzed, but often it's beyond that. It's also the spirit world influencing events. I want to go to the book of Ephesians. Now, I don't know how much time I'll have to get into this today. It is a very deep subject, but I'll try to cover it to an extent. I want to at least give you a sense of the reality. There is a spirit world affecting world events, and we need to be aware of that, and just be aware of that reality, and realize that it does influence behavior. We talk about human nature, and indeed there is a downward pull that humans have. We have a negative side, we have a seamier side, but it is not necessarily innate. There is actually a force working on us that we have to overcome, and we can, but it is there. The downward pull that we feel when we're at our lesser state, you know, when we're the seamier side of us, is to some degree a result of an outside influence that God has allowed that is there. We call it human nature, but it's actually a force that is a downward pull that it exists in the world. And we have to overcome it. We overcome it by training people to do the right thing, and then by punishing them when they don't. You know, most societies tell people don't steal, even though there's a tendency to want to steal. And then if people do it, they punish them. So they deal with it by, first of all, training you not to do it, and then by punishing you if you do it. But the downward pull is there. I want to go to Ephesians 2. It says in Ephesians 2, "And you he made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who works in the sons of disobedience." So there is a spirit being who broadcasts, as it were, an influence, a negative influence. It's out there. And so people do have that downward pull. It's a part of the environment that we have to have. It's pervasive. It's there. It can be dealt with. It can be overcome. But it has to be acknowledged. And it is beyond the physical. 2 Corinthians is where I want to go now, to the fourth chapter. 2 Corinthians 4, and I want to go to verse 4. So people are often deceived. They don't have the whole picture. And God has allowed that at this point in history. I want to go to 2 Corinthians 4:4, whose minds the God of this age has blinded. So the God of this age, there is a power that God has allowed to operate in this world. Now God is over that power, and God is super and in control, but he has allowed this lesser power to be here and to influence world events. Whose minds, verse 2 Corinthians 4:4, whose minds the God of this world has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. So some people just don't have an accurate picture, don't have sufficient faith, or have a distorted view, and Satan has blinded them, and God has allowed it for this period of time. Now, should you fear this? No. Should you be paranoid? No. You should be aware of it, but not fear it. 1 John 4 and verse 4. If you're listening to me now, you had enough interest to tune in, and I'm grateful for you if you have, because it means that you've got an interest in the truth. I am devoting myself. Now, I make a living helping immigrants learn English, or sometimes international students who come to America to study, to help them learn English. That's how I make my living. But what I really want to do is to keep the torch burning and to be able to pass it on when the time comes. And someday, I believe that torch will once again burn very brightly, and I'd like to be on board, you know, when that train leaves the station. You know, I want to be on board that train. But in the meantime, my job is to, you know, keep the faith and spread it to the extent that I can. And so if you're listening to me, you can be confident and not fear. 1 John 4 and verse 4. You are of God, little children, and have overcome them. You know, these forces of evil. You are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. I don't know how many of you are fans of contemporary Christian music, but I just recently heard a song along these lines. My children were playing a song. It's out now, or was just out a few months ago or something?
Yes. A song right now. It's called Greater.
Greater. There's a song called Greater. So if you listen to these FM stations that play CCM, these words have been put to music, of course, before now. I remember, those of you who remember the ministry of Gene Scott, he always used to have people singing this song. Anyway, you are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. I want to go to James 4. James 4. And this is an important principle. So we don't wallow in negativity. Please, you are very careful, a lot of you, with what you eat. Please be careful with what you stuff into your mind. Wow. It's a much greater problem to fill your mind with trash than to fill your body. Your body can deal with it better than your mind can, frankly. Your body has, you know, organs that cleanse the body. But your mind, once something's in your mind, I think scientifically it stays there. I think technically you remember subconsciously everything that you've ever said or done is there somewhere, I believe, in your subconscious. So please don't fill your mind with trash. Geigo, right? Garbage in, garbage out. Anyway, James 4 and verse 7. It says, therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. All right? Resist and he will flee from you. So if some bad thought comes into your mind, don't worry about how it got there. It got there one way or the other. Just push it out. Don't get all broken up that it was there, but just get broken up if you don't do something about it. Then you're going to be broken up if you don't do something about it. You know, it's self-destructive to wallow in it. So if you get a bad thought, that could happen, but just get rid of it. So you don't need to fear it, but let's be aware of it. And let's realize that when you read about world events, the scientists and experts and geopoliticians and philosophers are not going to have all the answers. You're going to need to go to the Bible, and the Bible will show you that there is a spirit force behind the scenes that influences events. Now I want to go to Luke, the fourth chapter. when Jesus was tempted by the devil. I want to go to Luke 4 and verse 5. Then the devil, taking him up on a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. So this is Luke writing under the influence of Paul, and I've read you what Paul wrote. And the devil said to him, all the authority, this authority I will give you and their glory, for this has been delivered to me, and I give it to whomever I wish. So you see, God has given Satan the power to set up rulers. Now, God has the ultimate say, but he's given Satan the power to influence world events. And Jesus didn't deny that here. He didn't say, ha, ha, what are you talking about? No, he didn't deny that Satan could have done that. He just, of course, didn't follow the yield to the temptation. But he didn't deny that Satan had the power influence world events. Verse 7, therefore, if you will worship before me, all will be yours. And Jesus answered and said, get behind me, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the eternal your God, and him only you shall serve. So resist and he flees, as you read. If you keep reading, you'll see eventually after three times, three strikes and you're out, to use the baseball analogy again. Three strikes and you're out. So resist and he's gone. But this is the world that is. This is reality. There are angels, and that's the good news, that there are angels. God has chosen to work through angels. You can ask him why, but that's what he's chosen to do. He created spirit beings to share his existence with, and ultimately he wants to share it with spirit beings who will be far greater than angels, much more like him, and that will be us. But first he created angels, and he uses angels, and he uses angels to help us. So there are angels, but there are also fallen angels. And they're like wild animals that have to be restrained. But sometimes God will take off the restraint to suit his purpose. I want to go to 2 Samuel, the 24th chapter. Sometimes a country gets very lax, very corrupt, and God allows it to go through problems, go through trouble. This was evidently happening in the land of Israel, even though David was king. But you know, there was a lot of turmoil in David's administration, unfortunately, because of some issues he had. Excuse me. So the country had become somewhat corrupt, and God allowed trouble to occur. Let's go to 2 Samuel 7, 24. Evidently, David decided to get kind of militaristic, imperialistic, and perhaps decided he would organize his country and perhaps institute conscription, institute a draft of some sort, and develop this huge army and maybe go out and expand, you know, and become imperialistic, become an empire builder. That's what happened in the ancient Middle East. Maybe he decided to do that, and very possibly he was wanted to get the country stirred up, what we call jingoism. You know, he wanted to get people ultra nationalistic, you know, march on, you know, and evidently some people, you know, were caught up in that. And so God saw that potential, allowed it to happen, and then dealt with it. So let's go to chapter 24 of 2 Samuel. Then the anger of the Eternal was aroused against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. So the king said to Joab, the commander of the army who was with him, now go throughout all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and count the people that I may know the number of the people. And Joab said to the king, now may the Eternal your God add to the people 100 times more than there are, and may the eyes of my lord the king see it, but why does my lord the king desire this thing? Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the army. Therefore, Joab and the captains of the army went out from the presence of the king to count the people of Israel. Now, Joab was very reluctant to do this and didn't even finish it. He was just, he probably, lollygagged around to the best he could so they didn't even have to finish it. But he did do a lot of it. But what does it say about it? It says that God move David to do it. Well, does God move people to do the wrong thing? No. But God allowed Satan, because Satan does in fact push people to do the wrong thing. So God removed the restraint and Satan did it. And I can tell you that from the Bible. I'm going now to First Chronicles 21. Now you see what it says here? Now Satan stood up against Israel and moved David to number Israel. You see, so God wanted this to happen because of the sins of the people. So he removed the restraint, the protection that he normally would have given. And then Satan pounces. He pounces when he can. And he pounced here. And so Satan stood up against Israel, moved David to number Israel. Now let's go to verse 5 of this chapter. Then Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to David. All Israel had, I don't know if I need to give numbers. Let's go to verse 6. But he did not count Levi and Benjamin among them, for the king's word was abominable to Joab. So he didn't even finish the job that he was called upon to do. He just was very reluctant to do it. And God was displeased with this thing, therefore he struck Israel. So he gave, in effect, removed the restraint. Satan got in there and David went for it. David blew it. And God was angry. David did not overcome this tendency, I guess, to want to be militaristic and imperialistic. So David said to God, I have sinned greatly. You know, he saw that the trouble was there. So David said to God, I have sinned greatly because I have done this thing. But now I pray, take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly. Then the Eternal spoke to Gad, David's seer, saying, so now we have a prophet, Gad in English, or, you know, God in the Hebrew, but it pronounced Gad in English. There was an Israel, you know, sometimes you find the name Gadi in the Bible, G-A-D-D-I. So sometimes a person is named in Hebrew God, or sometimes Gadi. There's a very famous Israeli singer now, a religious fellow. His name is Gad Elbaz. I got to see him perform here in Orlando, believe it or not. But he's an Israeli singer. But he likes to joke around. His name is Gad, or God in Hebrew. So he was telling the audience, remember, there's only one God. Kind of maybe not the best pun there. But anyway, years ago, though, I saw another singer, and I was in Austin at the time, Austin, Texas, and another Israeli singer came along, and his name was, I believe, Gadi Alon, and he went by the name Gadi, G-A-D-D-I, which also you find in the Bible, but he looked at it as a kind of a nickname, that his real name was Gad, or God in Hebrew. But he went by the name Gadi, and he told the audience, here's why I go by the name Gadi. He says, what if I came to somebody in America and I wanted to do a concert, and I said to them, my name is God and I come from Israel. You know, so he decided, if I call myself Gadi alone, I'll do better. Now, I don't know what kind of career he had, if he became very well known or not, but Gad Elbaz is quite successful. Gadi alone, I don't know whatever happened to him. Anyway, we're going back to now Gad. I'll use the English pronunciation. Then the Eternal spoke to Gad, David's seer, saying, go and tell David, saying, thus says the Eternal, I offer you three things. Choose one of them for yourself that I may do it to you. So this was David's chance to show wisdom, which he did. So Gad came to David and said to him, thus says the Eternal, choose for yourself either 3 years of famine, or 3 months to be defeated by your foes with the sword of your enemies overtaking you, or else for 3 days the sword of the Eternal, the plague in the land with the angel of the Eternal destroying throughout all the territory of Israel. Now consider what answer I should take back to him who sent me. So God wants to punish the country. He's given you a chance and you blew it. And so he is going to punish the country. So what are you going to do? What punishment are you going to choose? And David said to Gad in verse 13, I am in great distress. Someday you may come to an Orthodox synagogue some morning during the week, Monday or Thursday, and you'll see the men sit there praying, and then you'll see everybody sit down and put their head into their arm like that. And you wonder, what are they doing? They're reading this verse. Now, I don't know why they have to do that, but they read this verse and they copy what David says here. As they do it. You know, one thing about this world's religions is gestures often are a part of it, you know, swaying or, you know, moving your hands or your head or whatever. And David said to Gad, I am in great distress. Please let me fall into the hand of the Eternal. As I said, so they sit down and they put their head into their arm. Please let me fall into the hand of the Eternal, for his mercies are very great. But do not let me fall into the hand of man. So he said, if I'm going to be punished, let it be by the hand of God, not, by people invading. So the Eternal sent a plague upon Israel, and 70,000 men of Israel fell. So evidently the country had become very corrupt, and this was the punishment. Verse 15, and God sent an angel to destroy it, and as he was destroying, the Eternal looked and relented of the disaster, and said to the angel who was destroying, it is enough! Now restrain your hand. And the angel of the Eternal stood by the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. So the plague did stop. You see, God is merciful. He did punish, but then the plague ended. And then in verse 16, we see the beginning of the place where the temple would later stand. Then David lifted his eyes and saw the angel of the Eternal standing between earth and heaven, having in his hand a drawn sword stretched out over Jerusalem. So David and the elders, clothed in sackcloth, fell on their faces. And David said to God, was it not I who commanded the people to be numbered? I am the one who has sinned in the evil. Indeed, but these sheep, what have they done? So the specific problem was mine. Now, obviously, Israel had been corrupt, and these people were not totally innocent. But he, in effect, he's taking the blame. I'm the king, and I'm taking the blame. So just as his descendant, Jesus Christ, did the same, you know. Let your hand, I pray, O Eternal my God, be against me and my father's house, but not against your people, that they should be plagued. Wonderful attitude. Therefore, the angel of the Eternal, verse 18, commanded Gad to say to David that David should go and erect an altar to the Eternal on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. And this was the beginning. Ultimately, the temple stood there on that spot. So here you see things happening behind the scenes. You see spirit influence here. That a political scientist isn't going to be able to prove by taking by his own instrumentation or even a physical scientist, whatever you want to say, a physicist, a chemist, a nuclear physicist, a rocket scientist, they're not going to know these things. But there were spirit activities going on here, and God can influence a person in a positive way. And each of us has a human spirit, and God's spirit can influence our human spirit in a positive way. And so if you are in a situation where you need the favor of a VIP, pray to God that he would move that VIP, to look upon you favorably. You can pray that. Look at 2 Chronicles 22. We're at the end of 2 Chronicles. Did I say 22? Chapter 36, verse 22. The end of 2 Chronicles. Let's take a look. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Eternal by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Eternal stirred up the spirit of Cyrus. Oh, so he influenced Cyrus in a positive way. He stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and also put it in writing, saying, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, verse 23. By the way, Cyrus was the king who, as you know, allowed the Jews to come back to their land and rebuild their temple, their city, their city, their walls. They ultimately did all those things. Harry Truman in 1948, when he recognized Israel's right to exist as a state, he said, "I'm Cyrus." Harry Truman said about himself. Anyway. Verse 23. That's for you, for American, most people have heard of Harry Truman, I guess. Even if you're not American, you've probably heard of him. He's a famous American president. Anyway, verse 23. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth the Eternal God of heaven has given me, and he has commanded me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is among you of all his people? May the Eternal his God be with him, and let him go up. And so he was influenced by God in a positive way. So there is this power that is there that we need to be aware of. That's why we need to stay close to God and be prayerful and tap into that power. I want to go now to 1 Kings 22. And here is a situation in the time of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, and Ahab, king of Israel. Jehoshaphat made the mistake of getting too cozy with Ahab. Now, sure, they were of the same nation. They were both Israelites, but Ahab was wicked and Jehoshaphat was righteous. So you've got to be careful. That doesn't mean you're a hermit and you're antisocial and you're hateful, but still, you want to hang out with the right people, you understand that you want to reinforce your good habits, and you don't want to hang out with people that are going to drag you down. Follow what I'm saying? Don't hang out with people who are going to drag you down. If you find yourself being dragged down, move on. You know, move on to other companions who don't drag you down. Anyway, 1 Kings 22. Now 3 years passed without war between Syria and Israel, and it came to pass in the third year that Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went down to visit the king of Israel. And the king of Israel said to his servants, "Do you know that Ramoth and Gilead is ours, but we hesitate to take it out of the hand of the king of Syria?" Oh, like the Golan Heights area, right? When Israel has that now, but at one time Syria had it. So back in those days, Syria had it, and the Israelites wanted it back. So the king of the northern part of Israel, Ahab, talked to the southern king, the king of Judah, Jehoshaphat, and said, "Let's get together and let's go against the Syrians to take that land back." I want to go now to 2 Chronicles and see the account there. The 18th chapter of 2 Chronicles and see the account there. I'm in 2 Chronicles 18. Back when I was younger, when Americans were very excited, they would say, "Jump in Jehoshaphat." I guess that they don't say that anymore because people don't know about the Bible anymore. You know, it's interesting. There are some people who know a lot about the Bible in America, but more and more Americans know very little. It's interesting. We've become a very bifurcated society. We have the ultra-religious, and we have the very secular. That's the way it has been in Europe for many years, but it was particularly in Israel, I know. We've had the very religious and the very secular, although even the very secular know the Bible in Israel because it's the national book. But here in America, used to be most Americans had some familiarity with the Bible. Now the religious community knows it well, and the general community hardly knows it at all. I don't know. Yeah, I've got on that from the Jump in Jehoshaphat expression. All right, anyway. So now we have the subculture in America. We have contemporary Christian music, and we even have now Christian movies coming out. There's a movie coming out now called War Room about the power of prayer. You know, and I think it's going to do fairly well. I get the idea it's going to make some money. You know, so Christians are putting out their own movies, you know, because in the old days, generally families would go to movies, and movies often were very moralistic and often very biblical. But now, you know, it's come to the point, you know, where the religious people have to put out their own films. It's, you know, as I said, we're bifurcated now more and more. Anyway. Let's go back to 2 Chronicles 18. So Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance, and by marriage allied himself with Ahab. Uh-oh. Well, you know, his son married Ahab's daughter.
Just so you know, War Room actually was the number one film on Friday in America.
War Room was the number one film on Friday. How do you like that?
It's okay. Slow time of year.
It's a slow time. All right, but, well, I'm saying, we're coming to the point where people... are in effect wearing their religion on their sleeve more and more because so many people are virtually non-religious. Let me give you an example of that. Scotland. I recently saw that in Scotland, about half the people, when they say, "What is your religion?" they say none. Isn't that interesting? I mean, there was a time when most people would have said that they were part of the Church of Scotland. You know, now some, you know, about half of them are. Of course, some are various other things. But about half of them are just, if you ask religion, they say none. That's from what I understand. A survey was taken there in Scotland. So I'm saying that's what's happening in the world. But what's also interesting, I didn't mean to talk about this, but the demography, you know, secular people don't have a lot of children. Religious people tend to have a lot of children. And so that's one thing that keeps the religious minority going, is that they actually outproduce in terms of children the secular ones. So that that sort of helps keep the balance. All right, anyway, enough demography. 2 Chronicles 18. Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance, and by marriage he allied himself with Ahab. After some years he went down to visit Ahab in Samaria, and Ahab killed sheep and oxen in abundance for him and the people who were with him, and persuaded him to go up with him to Ramoth Gilead. So Ahab king of Judah said to Jehoshaphat Ahab king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat king of Judah, "Will you go with me against Ramoth Gilead?" And he answered him, "I am as you are, and my people as your people. We will be with you in the war." Wow. Also Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, "Please inquire for the word of Yahweh today. I want to talk to the Eternal. I want to talk to the God of Israel." But the king had these prophets who were really pagan prophets. Then the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, 400 men, and said to them, "Shall we go to war against Ramoth-Gilead, or shall I refrain?" So they said, "Go up, for God will deliver it into the king's hand." But Jehoshaphat recognized that these prophets were not really the kind of prophet he wanted. I guess he wanted one who was a shomer mitzvot. I guess he wanted a prophet who was truly a prophet of the eternal, you know, who kept Shabbat and the holy days and so on. But Jehoshaphat said, "Is there not still a prophet of the eternal here that we may inquire of him?" So the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, "There is still one man." This is in the northern kingdom. "There is still one man by whom we may inquire of the eternal, but I hate him because he never prophesies good concerning me, but always evil. He is Micaiah, the son of Imla." And Jehoshaphat said, "Let not the king say such things. Give him a chance to speak." Right? Jehoshaphat wanted a legitimate prophet of the God of Israel to speak. Now, very likely the man was in prison at this time, but he, you know, was very likely called out of his incarceration to come before the king. Then the king of Israel called one of his officers and said, "Bring Micaiah, the son of Imla, quickly." The king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, clothed in their robes, sat each on his throne, and they sat at a threshing floor at the entrance of the gate of Samaria, and all the prophets prophesied before them. Now Zedekiah, the son of Hananiah, had made horns of iron for himself, and he said, "Thus says the Eternal, with these you shall gore the Syrians until they are destroyed." So these people may actually have had visions of that sort. You know, they may have seen visions in their own mind. They may have felt that they were being spoken to. I remember a student of mine. Remember, I teach English. I remember one of my English students from Brazil who had become very religious, and he got that way because some voice began to talk to him. You know, let's resist these kinds of things. You know, you don't want voices telling you what to do. Yeah. Anyway. Verse 11, "And all the prophets prophesied so, saying, Go up to Ramoth-Gilead and prosper, for the Eternal will deliver it into the king's hand. Then the messenger who had gone to call Micaiah spoke to him, saying, Now listen, the words of the prophets with one accord encourage the king. Therefore, please let your word be like the word of one of them and speak encouragement." He was warning him to tell the king what he wants to hear. And Micaiah said, "As the Eternal lives, whatever my God says, that I will speak." Now that's going to be the difference. A true prophet is only going to tell the truth, not what the king wants to hear. Then he came to the king, and the king said to Micaiah, "Shall we go to war against Ramoth-Gilead, or shall I refrain?" And he said, "Go and prosper, and they shall be delivered into your hand." Probably quite sarcastically. And the king knew he was just saying what everybody else said, and kind of mocking them. And so the king got upset with him. So the king said to him, "How many times shall I make you swear that you tell me nothing but the truth in the name of the Eternal?" But he really didn't want to hear it. Then he said, "I saw all Israel scattered on the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And the Eternal said, they have no master. Let each return to his house in peace." Just go, leave. You've lost. You know, go home. And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, "Did I not tell you he would not prophesy good concerning me, but evil?" So he pushed him to tell the truth, and then he, you know, condemned him for it. Very typical, you know. Then Micaiah got eloquent. You know, he had summarized it, and then he, in effect, lifted the curtain and gave us a vision that he saw. Then Micaiah said, "Therefore, hear the word of the Eternal. I saw the Eternal sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing on his right hand and on his left." So here's a vision that Micaiah had. And the Eternal said, "Who will persuade Ahab, king of Israel, to go up that he may fall at Ramoth-Gilead?" So one spoke in this manner, and another spoke in that manner. As I said, you see, there are wicked spirits. God allows them at times to have access to him, and he interacts with them when he so chooses. And they are like caged animals, and if he can, he restrains them, but if he takes away the restraint, then they can attack. And this is what he did here. Then a spirit came forward and stood before the Eternal and said, "I will persuade him." The Eternal said to him, "In what way?" So he said, "I will go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets, And the Eternal said, you shall persuade him and also prevail, go out and do so. So this is the vision that Micaiah saw. This was the explanation as given to him supernaturally. Then he shared it with the others. Then so verse 22, he says, therefore, look, the Eternal has put a lying spirit in the mouth of these prophets of yours, and the Eternal has declared disaster against you. So he was very profound in telling him there is a spiritual power behind the scenes, and it's, you know, goading you into this, but you're heading for trouble if you don't resist it. Now here I am representing God telling you it's a wrong decision. Then Zedekiah the son of Hananiah went near and struck Micaiah on the cheek and said, which way did the spirit from the Eternal go from me to speak to you? You know, very arrogant. Then Micaiah said, indeed, you shall see on that day when you go into an inner chamber to hide. You know, you're being very bellicose now to me, but you're going to be in fear later when you're on the losing side. Then the king said, take Micaiah and return him to Ammon, to the governor of the city, to Joash, the king's son, and say, thus says the king, put this fellow in prison and feed him with the bread of affliction and water of affliction until I return in peace. So give him a very basic diet. You know, just give him the basic treatment. Not great respect. Here he is a prophet of the Eternal, but just treat him like any common prisoner until I come back. Well, he didn't come back, as you know. You probably know the account. This was in fact Ahab's doom. He never came back. Came back dead. But Micaiah said, if you ever return in peace, the Eternal has not spoken by me. And he said, take heed, all you people. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead. And of course, it did end in disaster for Ahab. Now, fortunately, Jehoshaphat survived. God intervened for him, saved him. He came south, back to his throne. But a prophet in the south, if you could go to the end of the chapter, a prophet in the south criticized him for getting involved with Ahab. Jehu, the son of Hanani, criticized him for his involvement with Ahab. But anyway, the point I'm bringing out here is that for a moment, the curtain is lifted, and we see that behind the scenes, there's spirit power involved. Now, there are other times in the Bible when we see this. It occurs to me that at the time of Elisha, one of Elisha's servants was so fearful, and Elisha said, let him see the power that we have backing us up. And he saw all these angels there, this great army backing them up, you know, to reinforce him. You know, so as I said, there's power going on, activities going on that we don't know about. But we can know that they are there, at least. We know from the Bible that is a reality. There is a spirit reality. You know, as I said, you can look at the example there of Elisha. I hadn't planned to turn there. I was going to turn to one other one, though, in Daniel 10. And I, for lack of time, I'm not going to spend a lot of time with that. But I want to go to Daniel 10. And here we find that Daniel was given a prophecy, a very important prophecy that goes all the way from his day into the future, into the time of the second coming of Christ. Daniel 11, Daniel 12, very powerful prophecies that project world history forward from Daniel's time to the time of the end. But when Daniel was shown these prophecies, he was shown them by an angelic being who spoke about the fact that at times, God allows restraint to occur. Let me just read some of this. I am going to go to Daniel 10. Let's go to verse 12 of Daniel 10. Daniel waited 3 weeks to really understand the prophecies that he was studying. For 3 weeks, he was in a state of, very sober state, trying to understand these prophecies. Then we finally go to verse 12 of Daniel 10. Are you with me? Daniel 10:12. Then he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. And behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia. So God allowed this angel to be restrained by a fallen angel who was influencing the Empire of Persia. God allowed that restraint to be there for a time. And then Michael, the archangel who is responsible for the people of Israel, he came. And then this angel then was able to access Daniel, to go on to Daniel. So you see that there is activity going on in the spirit realm that we don't know about, but occasionally, as I said, the curtain is lifted and God shows us there's more to world events than what we know. There is a spirit's power going on. There are powerful forces going behind the scenes. We don't have, as I said, we don't need to fear. We just should be aware of that. We need to be aware of that. And I want to also mention finally at the end in verse 20 what this angel says to him. Then he said, "Do you know why I have come to you?" You know, he did reveal tremendous secrets to Daniel, although some of them Daniel did not even understand. And he told him, and God told him, you don't need to understand all of it, because some of it is not real, it's for way, way in the future. But he did give it to Daniel, at least to write down for our benefit. So I'm at the end of Daniel 10. Then he said, "Do you know why I have come to you? And now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia." So evidently this angel was now going to have power over Persia, because the Persians, possibly this is projecting out into history. You may remember from your ancient history, Persia attempted to conquer the West, but failed. Then from the West, the Greeks came. Alexander the Great came from Macedonia with the Greeks and conquered Persia. And so that's what Daniel is told here. Then he said, "Do you know why I have come to you? And now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I have gone forth, indeed the prince of Greece will come." You know, so after Daniel's dead and gone, Alexander the Great swoops over the Middle East and conquers all that area. So it's really interesting. So as I said, these events are influenced. God prophesies, and God causes the prophecies to be fulfilled, and he does that at times through the influence of the spirit world. Maybe I should also read that verse in Isaiah. Let me go to Isaiah 46 and verse 9. I want to go to